Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's the beginning of September 2017, September 5th, actually. This is our first show in almost a month that's live. A big shout out to everybody that was with us this summer. We went up to Washington County up in New York by the Vermont border, did a show about agriculture and beer and cider. That was pretty great. And we took out of the archives a show, Great Cider Show, with Diane Flint of Foggy Ridge Cider in Virginia, a big pioneer in the American fine cider movement. So we got to have some fun this summer and check out. I was down in Cape May. I got to pour beer at a festival with Cape May Brewing, which was another big treat for me. And, you know, all the things I did this summer, the boys that are in the room tonight, they got to do things that I wish I could have done, things like things that I feel like I was missing out on. So, Joel, you've been telling me for years, Joel Shelton, about the Franconia Summertime Festivals in Germany. So tell me what had you. You got everybody introduce themselves. This is a little too much of an intro. Guys, come around the room and we'll talk about what you guys did this summer.
It's Pete Lingell from Kings County Brewers Collective.
Ethan Long with Rockaway Brewing Company.
Joel Shelton with Shelton Brothers.
So last year you told me, Joel, that, you know, I should come in, what is it, the end of July, go to Franconia in Germany. And what things go on there in the summertime?
Well, for several years, my brother and I, at least, and depending who can go, it can be a group as big as 20 this year. We go to Franconia. We center ourselves in Bamberg, that most beer people know about, where the Rauch beer comes from, and is arguably the best beer town in Germany. I think the most breweries per capita, and just a beautiful place. So we go there every summer and base ourselves for 3 days or so, and then within those days, we go to something called Annafest, which is in a town called Forchheim, a few miles away. It's a beautiful spot where there's kind of a party up in the hills, all these beer kellers from the old days in Germany, and there's one band after another and one beer after another, and it's just a big whoop-it-up fest. And then the day after, or 2 days after that, we go to Kulmbacher Bierwoche, which is Kulmbacher Beer Week at our brewery in Kulmbach that we import from. And it's a big Oompa Fest, and then it becomes kind of a rock band fest at night, and everyone's jumping up and down and going nuts. So we get a lot of fest time in, and a lot of Keller beer drinking in, and a lot of rock beer drinking in.
So they really, do people really like the Oompa bands, too?
You know what? At night, when they have an Oompa kind of band in the afternoon when the old men and old ladies are there, and then they go home. And then when it gets dark, the youngsters are there. Well, everyone's there, but they get more of a German pop band, which is sort of like Oompa, but with power chords.
Who remembers Nina Hagen?
I do.
They do those. They do those.
Anything like that?
Every band does, it seems like, the same 100 songs, and everybody in Germany knows all of them from age 2 to 102, and they're all stomping up and down.
So there's this myth. So some summers we've gone up to Cooperstown for the Belgian Comes to Cooperstown Festival, and this was the year to go to Franconia. So you guys, tell us your story. So Ethan from Rockaway and Pete from KCB, so you guys ended up in Germany.
Yeah, we were invited out for Berlin Beer Week, actually, and then happened to coincide with the annual Shelton Brothers trip, and they invited us down to Franconia, and then Ethan had a wonderful idea.
Well, it dawned on me we needed to travel to southern Germany and Bavaria, but what better way to do it than on a motorcycle? So I twisted Pete's arm, fortunately not too hard, because he was right on it, and we were able to rent bikes in Berlin and have a amazing bike ride down to through Bamberg and down to Franconia.
But weren't you guys totally rained out on one of those bike trips?
That was less amazing, yeah.
They don't tell you the bad part, Jimmy. I'm here to tell you the bad part.
Yes, Pete was freezing. We were soaking wet. I was dumping water out of my boot. But once we got down there and sun came out, we had some amazing, beautiful rides up through the local mountains.
Well, so you guys had kind of the ultimate summer beer trip, and then you made a collaborative beer.
That's right. Joel hooked us up with Gonstallbrau, Andy Gonstaller.
Yeah, it's kind of
Andy I thought he was coming today. Andy Gonstaller.
We didn't lie about that, did we?
He would be great to be here. He was a fun personality.
Well, we had him here one. Jimmy had him
here.
He was
on the show a few years ago, yeah.
But Andy doesn't get out too much. I mean, he's pretty busy at the brewery and trying to get it going, you know, because it's a fairly new brewery and small. And he wants to get here as soon as he can. He loves New York, and he's going to come and brew with you guys and do all that.
But you guys have really built a great community. So not only did I miss the going to Franconia, you also had your annual festival this year in Atlanta in August.
Yeah, it came right on the heels of the German trip, which is unusual. We usually have it in the fall. Last few years, and for some reason unknown to me, we had it in August, and none of us
in Atlanta,
none of us who weren't based in Belchertown, where our office is, understood why that happened. But we said, "All right, we'll go to Atlanta in August."
Why and not? What was the number one style of beer at the festival in Atlanta, or one you were telling me before?
Well, it seems like people, as always, line up for about a mile to get to the Cantillon table. And it's sort of embarrassing because all the other brewers are standing there watching the Cantillon line for the first hour. And everyone's just in that line, more or less.
And what about Gozes? Weren't a lot of brewers making Gozes, too?
Yeah. Sour beers are kind of, you kind of need sour beers at festivals now because people expect them. It's kind of the cutting edge. Well, maybe not so much anymore. But I think we're getting over that at some point.
We're just all warming up. It's been a long summer.
That's
true. We're chilling out. We're drinking. What's our first beer, Ethan? Is it a Rockaway beer?
It is. So I brought two beers, kind of appropriate for summer.
I'll take more, too. It's
at the beginning of the summer, we do our beach beer, kind of heavy doses of Mosaic lupulin powder on top of a body of wheat, kind of a nice, sessionable summer beer. We usually finish the summer off with what we call Muscle Beach, so that'll be the can underneath, so that it's kind of we do a beginning through the summer, and then as we do a can release, we just had this come out this weekend with Muscle Beach that kind of finishes the August into September period with a nice kind of double, we call it a double session IPA, so it's Muscle Beach on steroids.
Well, we'll talk more on the show about the collaboration that you and Pete made at Gonstaller, but tell me, catch me up with Rockaway Brewing from Long Island City. You know, when you guys first opened, you used to self-distribute to Jimmy's Number 43 and a lot of local bars.
That's true.
You guys are growing a little bit.
I've seen you around town, but not on the show, so it's nice to be back and sitting in this chair and be able to converse about it. So since last speaking, you know, we have a space in Rockaway now that is a year old that has been kind of a nice pivot point on the beach that gives us an outdoor space and a nice indoor space to do events and kind of expand, you know, where we already sell a lot of beer in Rockaway, but it's nice to have a physical footprint there. So that has been evolving all summer. We now have a food program in the front, kind of similar to like Roberta's here, where there's a container out front and gives a different vibe. So that's been, you know, exciting to see a second summer of our Rockaway space.
How long are you going to be out there this year?
We stay open year round. So it's not a seasonal thing. So that was, you know, last winter was an interesting challenge to see how the reaction would be, you know, how slow it would get. But there was a nice, solid local presence, and we stayed open all winter. And it was nice to see.
Congratulations.
Cheers. Our local community, you know, excited about beer. I mean, that was one thing that was...
Joel.
We never knew, you know, how the reaction would be with the people who live on the block or in parts of the peninsula. But as it progressed, you know, people were coming in and saying, "This is great. I'm so glad you guys are open. I'm telling everyone to come." So it's, you know, it's been
you
a
guys,
nice
you, you hung out in Rockaway. You always meant to be in Rockaway, but your original brewery is in Long Island City.
Right. And, you know, to be honest, the space we're in out there now, we tried to get 4 years ago. Just couldn't get it to come together to seal the deal on that space. We ended up expanding in our Long Island City space into the space next to us so we could increase our brew production. And then last year, the space became available, and so we said, well, we have to take it. And so now we're developing a plan to be able to put a bigger brew house in the Rockaway space. And kind of right now it's our satellite, but eventually it'll become kind of our brew hub in Long Island City. We'll continue because it's nice to be so close to the city and have, you know, the Queens community there, but we kind of anchor both sides of of Queens, and there'll be a ferry that goes from one to the other.
So. Wow, man, that's great. And Pete, you just poured the next beer for us.
Yeah, this is Strap Hanger. It's our rice lager. It's a slightly hoppy, 4.9%, 22% rice, crispy dry lager. This is the second run. We've canned it now, and we might continue to produce this and put it in cans. I brought it because it's a lager, and we're talking about Germany, but it is a rice lager, so it's got an American twist to it.
So when you guys ended up in, where's Ganstahl, Andy's place? Is that in Freiburg? Not Franconia.
Schneid.
Somewhere. Yeah, you know Schneid, Jimmy, right?
I ran into a guy last week at a festival. Like, I'm from Freiburg, and I had that brain thing where I'm like, you mean that's in Franconia? No.
No, it's not. But Schneid is just a few miles or kilometers, I should say, outside of Bamberg. But within a few kilometers every direction outside of Bamberg, there's a brewery. Maybe not as great as Andy's, but it's a pretty classic old brewery. I don't know, from the 1800s, I guess, or late 1800s. You guys would know more about brewery setups, but it's a classic kind of start from the top and come your way down brewery from the Victorian days, and a little factory. And Andy got a hold of this brewery a few years ago. He was sort of brewing in different places, and he finally settled down in this place. And it's like a mad scientist in this factory. These guys can tell you about how it works. But
yeah, he was saying the building was 180 years old, and obviously it's been through some renovations and different machinations as different breweries. But up in the attic was a beautiful Franconian cool ship, a big copper monstrosity
trough
up there that was pretty fun and interesting to use and kind of beautiful to see.
Yeah, he uses it more like an American brewer would do a whirlpool addition or a hop back. So he does a hop dosing in the cool ship, gets it down to 75°C, and then he'll pump it down through his heat exchanger, and it goes into fermentation. But the brewery was fascinating, so was the guy. It's like Joel said, it was originally a gravity brew house, so there's lots of stairs and lots of levels and lots of exercise, I guess, but...
Yeah, you wouldn't want to drink too much while brewing.
No, it's all concrete.
So you bring everything upstairs and you start the brewing at the top, and then it kind of
is it still
down.
Works that way more or less, correct? I mean,
yeah, they still, and I guess originally did have to pump the wort after a knockout up to the cool ship,
yeah,
and then it will trickle down by gravity. But would start at the top with mill room, and then.
And Andy likes to do decoction brews, so we were able to. The mash was just above the kettle, so we were able to, draw it down and then pump it back up and draw it back down.
That's great. We got so much to talk about. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, Sheehan Family Companies, formerly L. Knife & Son, acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn. Union Beer has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Brooklyn and parts of Queens through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten Island, and Long Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education at all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the seven counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's our first show of the fall, September 5th, 2017. So we're talking our boys, Ethan from Rockaway Brewing and Pete from KCBC. They just got back from Franconia. So you guys got to Andy Gonstaller's place. Talk us through it. Decoction, cool ships, gravity brewery.
Well, we managed to find the place on our motorcycles in this little hilltop right before the road turns to dirt on a slightly rainy day, not like we had encountered the night before. So we pulled in, and we're quite surprised to see this standalone building with built basically around a brew house. It seemed like it used to have a tasting room across in the barn, but it's kind of a vertical
brew tower
with the pieces and parts all built into it from the attic cool ship all the way down to the basement kind of lagering cooler.
He actually grains out into the street. He puts a little cone out, and he's on a blind curve too, so it's a little hairy, but he's got a little pipe that comes out of the side of the building. He pulls his truck up with a little cart behind it, and then just shoots the grain out into the street and catches it. And then he drives it straight to the local farmer and drops it off for the cows.
And all this is actually normal in Franconia. It never disappeared. This is why we go there, and that's why I wanted these guys to check it out, too, because it's something that Americans don't really know about. It's not a place tourists go so much, but every little village, practically, you go there, and there's some brewery operating similarly to this. I mean, it's just a thing they've always done. It's not even, they don't consider themselves artisans that much. It's just like a job for them, right?
Yeah.
But they make some of the best beer in the world, but that's just what they've always done, and given the cows the grain and made little batches and the farmers drink it.
They're not craft brewers because they never lost their craft brewing. So it's just how they do it, how they've always done it.
So what's decoction?
Well, decoction is bringing the mash temperature up, like you pull a little bit of the mash into the kettle, heat it up, and then reintroduce it into the mash to then raise the temperature up incrementally to your final point, so that you're getting different caramelization of sugars at each kind of rest period of temperature. So you don't want to just, you start low instead of start like typically a lot of American brewers and other brewers will kind of have one temperature. They go in, they hit their target, they rest there, and they're done. This way you'll start at kind of a 128, 130, and then work your way all the way up to 150, 155, and then all the way out. But you want to do that kind of gradually without just adding heat to it. So you're taking part of the wort or part of the sort of the mash and heating it up and then reintroducing it so that you're continually using that heat from itself to kind of gradually rise.
What I understand is it gets more out of the grain. It gets more flavor out of the grains.
There is a debate on that. Traditional German brewers will claim you cannot get that decoction flavor unless you do an actual decoction. There are some brewers that will use specialty malts to try to mimic that, and the debate rages on. But this is actually a historical technique. It is because the malt was under modified mostly, so they had to go through these different temperature rests to finish what the maltsters are now these days finishing in the malt house for us. So they were going through different rests, breaking down and modifying the malt further in the mash, and getting as much extraction as they could out of it, which was necessary back then.
But so you enter this beer tower in Schneid in Franconia, if I remember that, not Freiburg.
It might have been Freiburg, too.
There's probably a Freiburg nearby, and you know, there's a lot of Freibergs there.
We're a little confused about where exactly it was.
Yeah, I don't think these guys were actually late for the start of the brew. Is that correct? But
no, we were pretty good. Dan and Martha were there, and
they were early. Okay,
they were early.
So Dan Paquette formerly Pretty Things.
Yeah, that's right. It was
that was great to hang out with them too. We have to make sure they become part of the conversation.
Well, I'll make a long story short. But Dan from formerly from Pretty Things is just sort of floating around Europe right now. He's in England trying to scheme up a brewery with his wife Martha. But he had been to Genschel a couple of years before and really loved it. And I just said, hey, come down and brew with these guys. And it was kind of a mad collection of people, but we just it worked out. Everyone could come at the same time and ask, and they just came into the brewery at the same day, and that's what happened. You know,
you often risk having too many chefs in the kitchen, but it was nice that, having gone from the emails with Dan to the actual conversations and sitting down. We actually had lunch the day before. It was a pleasant surprise of the kind of chemistry that was there. He was fun to work with and hang out.
So. And an excellent brewer.
Yes.
Were there any other quirks of the brewery, being a historical brewery?
Well, the yeast is one interesting thing. Is, being in this old building, there's, the yeast actually comes from another local brewery. So,
which his mother picks up for him.
Yeah, of course. Delivers
in the car. Yeah.
So we came downstairs, and the car pulls up, and the trunk opens up, and we, helped his mom pull a big keg of yeast that had just been harvested at another larger brewery. And brought over to us so that we had a fresh pitch to start with.
And then you guys, I saw that there was a cool kind of back and forth that Joel sent us. So you guys were all emailing Dan Paquette, you guys, and Andy. So you talked at one point about making a Saison or a lager.
Well, that was Dan's idea, the Saison, I think.
He's a Saison guy.
Yeah, he's a Saison guy.
And I wanted a kind of historic New York lager, some sort of like Rheingold reference or something that came from kind of the brewing of New York City that may have been a German brewer who had come over. And then if we could go back and use the systems that would have been in their knowledge base before they were brewing here, if there was some
like
way to
1860 German brewer.
Right, if there was a way to kind of pull that full circle from like where those conversations had come from pre kind of like what New York became as in brewing.
And then it became actual, this neighborhood became a theme. It was
Bushwick.
So I was drawing a blank on the name.
A lot of breweries were
Bushwick. It became a historic Bushwick idea, and which I liked because I realized from reading what one of you guys said that it was the beer our dad used to drink when we were little kids. It was the first beer we ever drank out of Dixie cups. It was a Bushwick style. It was Peels.
Peels, yeah.
And I said, all right, do that one. But then eventually Andy just said, no, we're doing this.
So you guys talked about a Saison, but you want to do a lager. And you use the lager yeast that...
I think it was always going to be a lager because Andy only, as Andy pointed out after all this debate went on, I only use lager yeast. So
I can't really do a Saison with a lager strain. But
so again, all these cooks in the kitchen, so you guys, you boys, tell me about brewing a beer in Germany.
Well, we did manage to convince the whole circle that we would have... some American hops to kind of be part of the conversation. I mean, I think it was nice that Andy kind of had found some local kind of einkorn and some other grains to be kind of a good anchor to the part of the conversation. And not that we necessarily needed to use, you know, popular American hops, but we were able to get our hands on some overly popular.
Citra and Mosaic, I believe.
Exactly. So very popular. But citrusy nonetheless.
Kind of,
so
you use some local malts as well.
Yeah. But then we were able to kind of bring the conversation back if we were doing like the double bock. So it's going to be a rather hoppy double bock.
Kind of a hoppelbock, if you will.
What
were you guys talking about? Like, you know, when you were brewing or that night when you were driving away, you know.
They weren't driving away. They went to a festival right after that, and we all got... we all got mildly intoxicated at the festival.
Yes, we all stumbled home very late that night.
Anifest.
So it was just a haze, and this is all I get from you guys? Come on.
They actually don't remember anything that happened. No, they remember the brewing. We weren't there for... these guys were there, but we only saw the cool ships.
So they drove in their motorcycles. It's like Motorcycle Diaries or something. Wim Wenders, Kings of the Road, and they drive in and they look at the brew tower and they spend days gazing at it. Not sure how to get to the top until they knocked on the door.
And it was unlocked.
Yes.
We came in and dabbled, and Andy did all the work. No, we tried to assist Andy as much as possible, but being his...
and not get in the way.
Not get in the way. It's his home spot. So he was running around, and he was very gracious to direct us. And you know, we changed a few gaskets and cleaned a few things and pitched some yeast, but nothing that would have gotten Andy's way too incredibly. But it was fun to have that... He was gracious to show us, you know, the quirks of a system and all the little things that were going on, so we could kind of, you know, intuit that and see.
So you guys had a fun summer beer vacation.
That was great.
Yep. It was work, actually. My partners are listening.
So what are the highlights? So you're
it's a write-off.
Motorcycle
it's a
write-off. Ride. Yeah. And you're in riding around Francona. Franconia, you know, for a beer fan, what are some of the places that I should go? And from these guys, I know, Joel, you can fill us in more, but... I've never been there, so I'm, you know, I want to go to Schlenkerler, I want to go to, you know, Schneider.
Well, I mean, there's no shortage of wonderful Keller beers to be had. I mean, that was the nice thing about Onifest is that it was a whole mountainside full of beer, and there's no way you're going to walk away without having, you know, consumed way too many liters of beer to...
It's only served in liters.
Yep, as it should be. Ordinarily, in the day-to-day Keller business, it's 0.5s. It's never liters in the daytime. But at Onifest, it's nothing but liters. And you have to have a few.
What was that Pilsner that everyone was recommending in Bamberg?
The one we went across the street?
Yeah.
This is Bamberg for you. There's a brewery across the street from Mars. We all met at Mars the night before the brew. A bunch of Shelton people and these guys. We all converged on. And then... Once we got sick of Mars, we went across the street, literally 20 yards, and there's a brewery called Käsemann.
That's the one.
Yeah, that was
and it looks just like a regular German restaurant. It looks like nothing, and they had this great pils. which we tried to import.
Do they brew the pills?
Yeah, right there. I mean, so and they've been doing it forever. It's just a normal thing there.
We stayed until they kicked us out.
They literally kicked us out.
And that pill's across the street from Spezial.
So
the breweries are all over the place there.
Yeah, from Spezial across the street is Fessler.
I've had you guys import Spezial.
Well, we used to.
There's been
some problems, so we haven't had it for a few years. But that's typical in Franconia. Little funny things happen, and they don't feel like sending it. But so there's two.
You just poured a big crawler for us. What was that?
That's Geniac Maniac. That's our Pilsner that we've been brewing.
I'll have another one of those.
Speaking of Pilsner,
this is like we're drinking the Bushwick Pils that the Germans
the new
came
Bushwick
in 1860
Pils.
And made in Brooklyn, man.
Named after our landlord who's half German.
Well, Janie, let's pass it around, Joel.
The one I have in my hand is the Bushwick Pils.
That's it, yeah.
This is going to taste like my daddy's beer from 1970?
Probably not. it'll be cleaner, I hope. It's also got Willamette hops, which is unusual for Pilsner. It's not a noble hop.
Oh, yeah, I can see, yeah. I can still taste the beer from Dad from 1970. And it's the benchmark against which all beer is measured for Shelton Brothers to this day.
You guys are sick.
That's a good answer.
I know. Everybody wants to drink Canteon. That's it, buddy. So you guys made a progression. You had great Dan Paquette, Ethan from Rockaway, Pete from KCBC. Joel was jumping in on this, and Andy Gonstar.
I was just writing emails. I wasn't.
Yeah, you guys were talking about some styles you suggested you wanted to make. You could pick one beer to make. You had to suggest Dortmunder, a German Saison. That was Dan. A vintage U.S. lager, like a... from our Pattinson writing, so that was probably from Dan, too.
Ron Pattinson. Yeah. That was Dan's. Okay. Yeah.
New England IPA, and then the Rheingold historical knockoff Bushwick Pils. So what style did you guys end up making?
Doppelbach.
A Doppelbach.
Of course.
None of those.
So Andy just decided that's what he wanted.
Yeah.
So when will this beer be sold and how? Only in Franconia?
We're getting all of it in America. And probably these guys will get most of it.
Yeah, and is there a name for it?
Real cheap. They're going to get it real cheap.
What's it going to be called?
Actually, we're deciding. I like Hoppelbach myself.
Hoppelbach.
I just heard that here on this show. That's why this show is so important.
Probably taken already.
We've been bouncing around a few ideas. I think we're down to the final two. We'll put that one into the hat to throw in the mix.
There was a good one last week. That was a good name.
What
was the choice for name that you would like, Ethan?
I was in the boat of kind of depending on the spelling, but... because Pete had mentioned Mystery Men, and so we were trying to add the Ader to it. So it was Mysteriator or Mystery. I don't know how to get the proper tongue twister.
It's a work in progress.
Work in progress.
And there's the Masturbator that no one.
Oh,
no. Oh, no one's registered that one.
We probably won't do that.
I know. It's been too long, kids. A month of pre-recorded shows. We're back on the air.
But we'll get a name, and we'll actually get beer soon, I hope. I don't know the exact date, but it's going to be this fall, and I think it'll be mostly available in Brooklyn. That's my guess, which is fair enough.
And the last question, so the my favorite thing that the Shelton Brothers does is every fall you guys bring in a bunch of gravity casks from Franconia, mostly Keller beers and Lahn beers. Just tell us the names of some of the breweries that participate in that. I know there's Weissenauer.
Weissenauer is the major... supplier. He used to collect beers from different places, and now for some reason he's not so much, so we're getting a lot of Weissenauer. That's kind of what we're getting now, actually. It used to be a bunch of ones. It doesn't really matter. They're all kind of similar beers. If you go around Franconia, they're all making
Keller beers, a lot of beers. Which town is Weissenauer in?
It's in that town, the town of the same name.
The Weissenauer?
And it's a Klosterbrauer, meaning a Kloster brewery, of course. And it's been there for 10 years less than Weihenstephan.
The oldest brewery in the world.
Yeah, 10 years, 10 years less. So they
almost had them.
They should have beat them. But, and this Keller is in Lahn beers and this and that. But basically in Franconia, they don't have a strict designation for styles. They always call this beer lager beer or Keller beer. It doesn't mean much.
And to clarify, when I said the word with the Ader, typically all the Doppelbachs end with A-T-O-R. So the Salvatore, Celebrator, a couple others.
So we're trying to think of one that has that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that off.
Was Brooklynator was an idea?
That's what Andy wanted. I don't think Garrett would like that.
Oh, he already had it, right?
He's got one.
Yeah. And then last thing, just say, Franconia to me is still this mythical, place of beer from Bomborg and Mars and so many great beers that I've had over the years, mostly through through you guys. Let's make a toast to your guys' trip to Franconia.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Take a short break, and when we're back, we're going to be talking to a brewer from McKellar in Denmark, talking about the Boston Copenhagen Festival. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, we're back from summer, September 5th, 2017. We're just talking about Ethan from Rockaway and Pete from KCBC's journey to Franconia in Germany, and Joel's journey to the festival in Atlanta. But now we're going to talk about what's going on in Boston, September 22nd and 23rd. It's not a national disaster or emergency or anything like that, but there is a great beer festival that has roots in Copenhagen, Denmark. So, Jacob, operations manager of McKellar in Denmark, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, man. Super excited to be here.
You guys are cool, man. So just tell us what's going on. You guys, tell us about the Copenhagen Beer Fest and why you guys brought it to Boston. I know this is the second year in Boston.
We basically created the Copenhagen Beer Festival in Copenhagen 6 years ago, and the plan with it was just to build a platform where we could bring some of the best friends in the industry to Copenhagen and have a super networking thing where people could exchange ideas and bring their most rare brews, and it became something that was a big thing in Copenhagen, where the brewers, they were competing every year to bring the best stuff. And I think that we can safely say that we have right now probably the 70 best brewers in the world in Copenhagen. And then we had a chance last year to move it to Boston. And it was, being a relatively small Danish brewery, it was not that difficult to say yes to bring this party to Boston as well. And we are super, super proud that we did it last year, and really, really looking forward to doing it again this year.
Great. And what are some of the breweries that'll be in Boston? So September 22nd and 23rd in Boston, Massachusetts.
I mean, we have both a really, really exciting group of American breweries, some that have never been in Massachusetts before. Some of the good old heroes like Three Floyds, but also newer exciting breweries, some from Boston, where we know a lot of them, like Trillium, like others. Then we also have a really exciting group of European brewers, some from Denmark, of course, where we come with Warpix, and we come with McKellar, but also smaller breweries like Toil, and from Sweden we have Stickbaggett. And then, of course, some really interesting stuff from Belgium as well, where I know that people will be looking forward to seeing Bocker Rider in Boston again, and that should probably create some lines at the event.
Well, how many people do you expect at the festival?
I think we're hoping for about around 2,000 for each session. And of course, having that big an event in Boston is something that is pretty amazing for us.
Great. There's a couple brewers here from New York City, Ethan from Rockaway Brewing and Pete from KCBC. They're just in Franconia and Germany.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and Joel, one of the Shelton brothers, is here too. So, Joel, do you know a lot about Copenhagen Fest in Boston?
No, I don't know a lot about festivals because I never get invited to them. But
what's it actually called? No. It's a Copenhagen Beer and Music Festival. So,
no, a bunch of Shelton people are going to be there. I think they're always there, right?
Shelton is a long-term partner of ours, yeah. And I've been lucky enough to meet Joel a couple of times, and we couldn't do this festival without the help from Christian and others from Shelton, so we're looking forward to meeting them.
Yeah. So for you guys, Ethan and Pete, What are some breweries that you'd like to try that are probably going to be at that festival that you don't get in New York City? Because that's one thing. You can't really get all those breweries in New York City.
Gonstall Brow.
Gonstall. Will Gonstall be there? Maybe.
Maybe.
What?
Oh.
I don't think so.
It's okay. You're on the phone. You're in Copenhagen right now?
Yes, I am. Actually north of Copenhagen.
I did have a good Danish brewery during Berlin Beer Week. I am drawing a blank on the name, but there was two really good beers from
BQRL. Was it?
Not them. They were in Berlin. That was I liked their setup. That was a good group. But there was when we were at the at the night event we had. There was before we took the board down to put all the New York beers up. We had a nice spread of beers from a couple different countries.
Good. Jay, sorry, mate, it's a little delay, but...
Basically, I think one of the things with this festival is that usually I say, people ask me, so what would you recommend? And I basically recommend that you go to where the lines are the shortest because all the beers here are going to be great. And there's no reason to stand in lines for a long time. It's basically about talking to the brewers here. And one of the good things about this festival is that it is going to be the actual brewers that are here and pour the beer and are proud to do that. So I always say, go to where the lines are the shortest and then have a conversation with the brewers about what they're serving.
No, that's a great approach. I think that you have the right attitude. So just tell us a little about what's the scene like actually in Copenhagen. So you're north of Copenhagen. You know what's your day-to-day life there? You know the life you're working for a brewery. You guys are running festivals in Copenhagen, too. Tell us about that.
We are. I mean, Copenhagen is, and Europe is a little bit behind on the craft beer scene, but there's a really, really strong community growing all over Europe now, and countries like Sweden and UK are getting really strong. Of course, we are very much oriented towards the U.S. and buying the brewery in San Diego last year. Has not made that less strong, and we get a lot of our inspiration from the U.S., but also of course from the great traditions of Germany and Belgium, and a little bit from Denmark. But I think that we're somewhere in between, where we both have we have the really great connection to the U.S., but also can tap into to a lot of the a lot of the European traditions.
Yeah, man.
That was one thing I noticed on our Franconia trip and being in Berlin for Berlin Beer Week and seeing beers coming from the European side. It made me reflect and realize that we're doing a really great job here in the U.S. right now making great beers, and we were tasting great beers there that had come from a long history. But it was nice to see that there was some influence coming from our side, and that made me proud of what we were doing here.
Yeah, I'd like to just see a little more hops. Like everywhere I went with Ethan, we drank the beers, and like the malt is spot on, the fermentation is perfect. Just throw a little bit more hops in these German lagers, and that's it, and you're done.
The German hops are different from the American ones, so the effect can be more mild.
Yeah, they're
for sure. Yeah,
the noble hop character, but yeah, you know, amp it up a little bit. That's an American speak.
I mean, one of the things I like about sort of the modern time in beer is that now it's actually expected that you have a good variety, so that you both have a German Pilsner and you have a Saison and you have maybe a hazy IPA. And I think people expect now that brewers are able to master both the hardcore West Coast IPA, but also the New England style. And I really like that in the trends right now, that you see all kinds of different styles, and I'm super proud when we can bring some of our sort of very Belgian inspired beers to showcase in for instance Boston.
Definitely, same here. The spectrum is key, and from lagers to sour beers to hop bombs, got to be able to do it all. And that's what the customer wants and expects.
Jacob, my question. So tell us more about yourself. I mean, you're operations manager for McKellar. Tell us what roles, you know, you do, more about your job description.
I'm basically the guy at the brewery that doesn't know anything about beer. I've been working for Mikko for 5 years, and I usually describe myself as the guy that does everything that Mikko doesn't want to do. And it's obvious that a lot of stuff has happened for us over the past 5 years. And I'm actually super proud of when I look at the diversity of what we're able to do now, and also just all of the ideas that Mikko had that we're able to showcase around the world. We recently did a very big music festival in Copenhagen for about 20,000 people, where it was only Mikkeller and a few other craft beer, like other half from New York, and 18th Street from Gary, Indiana, were there. And doing that in Europe is a pretty crazy thing. In Europe, people expect that it will be Carlsberg or one of the other big commercial breweries that cover everything. So I think that with what we're doing, we also help change the beer world in Europe and hopefully also a little bit in the U.S. And I'm super proud about that.
Wow, that's cool, man. Yeah, we just had Mikkel called in last month, and he was talking about the Mikkeller NYC brewery that's opening at Citi Field in Queens. Yeah. Will you be part of that operation?
I mean, I oversee it with Mikkel, of course. We have, of course, controlling with everything we do, and obviously on the quality side, I'm not just talking about the beer, but also on the service and design and everything else. I will be part of that for sure, and have also been a big part of getting it put together. And that's another. I mean, we are lucky enough to be able to work more and more in the U.S. and it's something where we learn a lot. And also feel that we can give a little bit back. And that's just, it's great. And I can say now, I mean, working with Crashline in Boston, it's been an amazing experience for us, in an experience where we both have gained some really, really good friends, and also where we've learned a lot about how you can run festivals in a really professional way. So I'm also super excited about all the things that we've gotten out of the cooperation with Crashland.
Well, that's great, man. Hey, Jacob, thank you so much for calling in from Denmark. Okay, man. And good luck. Hopefully, we'll see you up in Boston for the Copenhagen Beer Celebration, September 22nd and 23rd.
Good to hear from you, Jacob.
Great.
I hope you guys will come up and party, because last year it was a blast, and I think this year will not be more slow than it was last year. So I hope you come enjoy the music and the beer.
Cool.
All right.
And last thing, our guys in the studio, so Ethan and Pete, just tell me some new things going on at your breweries and what to expect for fall in New York City.
Well, actually, we are turning one. This week, Thursday, is our first year anniversary party. So,
September 7th, in the night, KCBC, not too far from here.
No, we're on the Jefferson
stop
L.
on
yeah.
the L. Yeah,
381 Troutman between Wyckoff and Irving. So, we're having a big old party, and it's going to go through the weekend. So,
you make your share of Bushwick Pills. You get the Strap Hanger Rice Lager, the Janiac.
We just kicked that. Sorry. We'll have the Janiac, and we're going to put some special sour beers out, and a new double IPA. And lots of stuff.
And then Ethan Rockway. What's the last beer you poured for us?
That was the Muscle Beach to kind of finish the summer. I started you with the beach and ended with the Muscle Beach.
Can I get a little more of that? I liked it.
Yes, we got a couple more cans in the fridge, so we'll make sure you get that. That just released this weekend, so the numbers are limited, so those will be gone.
So we can still go out to Rockaway Beach and
check out
your spot?
Come out to Rockaway, enjoy some really good food and some good music been going on. We're having kind of a great time out there, getting kind of gearing up for, you know, the beach kind of closed this weekend, but now that means everyone's going to be coming off the beach and staying inside and having a great time with us.
And Joel, what's new for fall? You're going to have some gravity casks coming in?
Gravity kegs are going to be here, I think, next week. It's touch and go with these things, Jimmy, you know, but these little 20-liter fake wood things kind of take over the cool bars in New York for a couple of weeks or a few weeks.
They're all very malty, like these, like,
yeah.
beers and color
well,
beers.
Well, and Pete wants more hops in them, but I say, Pete, just let it go, Pete. Come on.
I can go both ways with that.
That's what they say.
It's the little bit of hops.
But yeah, they're pretty much malty beers, but very soft textured beers and a little earthy, and they can even get a little funky sometimes, which is fun.
All right. And then Justin, you think we're going to go up to Boston September 22nd, 23rd? We'll check out the Copenhagen Beer Celebration. I love that. Copenhagen Beer and Music Festival in Boston, Massachusetts. All right. So thanks, everybody. Joel, Ethan, my buddy. Haven't seen you in a while.
Great
and Pete from KCBZ, thanks for joining me on the Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out Justin Kennedy, producer, David Tadashore, engineer. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.